Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. More than 1 million children are homeschooled in America. Some estimate the number has actually reached 2 million. Christian conservatives fueled the trend in the 80s and 90s, but now rapid growth is coming from increasingly diverse quarters. Last month, the California appeals court stunned families across the nation by ruling that most homeschooling parents are breaking the law. Joining me in the studio to discuss how homeschooling is evolving and how and whether it should be regulated, Mike Donnelly of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and homeschooling parent Gretchen Rowe, joining us from a studio at Stanford University is Rob Riesch. He's associate professor of political science and ethics in society at Stanford University. You can join us as well. Call us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Professor Riesch, let me start with you. Give us some of the origins and background of the California case.
Good morning. Thanks. The California case, as I understand it, originated when a family with several kids, I believe 8 children, one of the older children alleged that there was some issue of child abuse in the home, which triggered some type of investigation, and a lawyer was appointed to represent the interests of some of the younger children. It was discovered in this inquiry that the children were being homeschooled through a outfit called the Sunland Christian School in California. There's actually no law in California that defines how a homeschool itself should proceed. You can only homeschool in California, well, prior to this ruling, by enrolling your child in a private school. But many private schools then made arrangements with homeschooling families so that instruction could happen in the home, even though the children happened to be enrolled at the private school. So the children at this point were enrolled at the private school, the Sunland Christian School, and lawyers made arguments about the interests of the child being best represented when the children would be actually enrolled in a school, not simply being schooled at home while being on the books at a private school. And after going through a series of court arguments, the ruling emerged that you just described in your intro, finding homeschooling, no constitutional right to homeschooling, and that homeschooling would be only permissible in California if the parents had an actual teaching credential.
But I gather the state of California does not seem inclined to enforce the decision at this time. Governor Schwarzenegger has called the ruling outrageous.
It is a surprising ruling because the trend across the country has been towards a lessening of homeschooling regulations rather than a stiffening of them. So in that respect, California is a bit atypical. Although I myself happen to think that the tide might be turning, and this just happens to be a rather quick switch of the in direction. I believe that more and more states will actually begin to examine homeschooling with greater scrutiny and probably increase the regulations that have been rolled back largely due to the HSLDA in the 80s and the 90s.
So are you in support of the appeals court ruling?
Well, I'm not in support of the idea that in order to homeschool, a parent or parents need to have a teaching credential. So I would reject that particular finding, although I would agree that homeschooling is not a constitutional right and that parents don't have an unfettered freedom to homeschool. So I'm in favor of homeschool regulation, but against the particular finding in this case that an appropriate regulation is that a parent has to have a teaching credential.
A board member of the California Teachers Union said that the union was happy with the ruling and believes that students should always be taught by credentialed teachers. We invited the California Teachers Union and its parent organization, the National Education Association, to participate in this program, and both declined. Now, let me turn to you, Mike Donnelly. What is the Homeschool Legal Defense Association's view of the ruling?
Well, we were shocked by the ruling. Homeschoolers, parents in California have been educating their children privately for decades by forming exempt schools or, as Professor Riche had indicated, enrolling their children in independent study programs. And so this particular family was not a member family of our association, and so we were not aware that this was making its way through the courts and were surprised by it. And as we analyzed the court's ruling, we think it's a deficient in a number of areas, both constitutionally but also in its interpretation of California statute. We do believe that California statute does allow for parents to privately teach their own children at home or anywhere.
And this ruling covers children between the ages of 6 and 18, so virtually every child except for those in kindergarten, I would assume.
Well, any child between the age of 6 and 18, that's California's compulsory attendance age. That's correct.
So if a child is homeschooled, then they're going to be charged with truancy.
What are you asking today?
I'm asking what the ruling means.
Well, the ruling specifically applies to this one family, okay? A court order can only be directed at a particular family. However, the court's legal reasoning would be considered precedent across California.
I see.
And in Los Angeles County and other counties in that area would be considered binding precedent.
Across the country, there are some 166,000 homeschooling families. Gretchen Rowe, why did you decide to homeschool your children?
Thank you, Diane, for inviting me, and it's my pleasure to be here today. My husband and I became a homeschool family overnight. In the course of the 2 weeks it took us to legally begin a homeschool, some now 14 years ago, we felt that the public school system was not meeting the academic needs of my daughter.
Who was how old
at
that time?
At that point, she was in third grade.
I see.
And we were told point blank that there was no necessity for her to memorize her multiplication tables. That was sort of the last straw in a long series of minor inconveniences that we had had with the public school system. And we felt that we could do equally as well at home as we could allowing her to remain in the public system.
What's your own background? Why did you feel you could take on homeschooling? That seems like a huge commitment.
It is. It is a full-time job. Families often say to me, well, you need to be very patient to be a homeschool parent, and I couldn't do that. If that were the defining characteristic, my children would tell you that doesn't work in my family. But we felt as though there were a wide variety of resources available to us. We knew many other families who did homeschool. And we actually, when we began, only intended to do it for the remainder of that academic year. My second child at the time was a kindergartner. He was a four-year-old who had taught himself to read before he began kindergarten. And I said to him at the beginning of kindergarten, I'm not going to teach you to read. Kindergarten is where you will have the opportunity to learn to do that. It's designed to teach you to learn to play cooperatively.
Hmm.
And he said, I want to learn to read. Well, by the time he left kindergarten, he was reading the Chronicles of Narnia.
Ah.
And we realized that he was going to, by default, become a discipline issue, not because he had attention deficit or he was disobedient, but because we needed to meet him at his level academically. And so we chose to continue to homeschool in
order
to meet his need.
And you felt the public school could not do that.
Yes, we did. He very quickly, we allowed him to drive the the learning process, and he basically worked his way through first, second, and third grade by the time he was 8 years old.
Gretchen Rose, she's been a homeschool parent for the past 14 years. She's the mother of 6 children. She is the homeschooling community liaison for the Calvert School, based in Hunt Valley, Maryland. You can join us 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Mike Conley, how fast do you see this homeschooling process growing?
Well, it's been growing very fast over the last 25 years or so, Diane. Right now, I think people say it's growing between 7 and 15% a year. You mentioned earlier between 1 and 2 million students across the country are homeschooled, somewhere between 3 and 5% of the school-age population. So it's growing fast.
And why do you think it's growing so quickly?
Well, when you look at reasons people give for homeschooling, there are 3 reasons that kind of top the chart. One is what you heard Gretchen say, is that they're dissatisfied with the academics that they're getting in public schools. The second is they're concerned about the safety of their children in public schools. I mean, it's sad, but we see so many stories about things that happen in the public schools that are concerns for safety for children. And thirdly, they want to make sure that they can teach their children moral and value systems that are appropriate. And so those are the reasons that people do it. And as you look at that, that's why I think it's grown so fast.
Mike Donnelly, he's staff attorney for the Home School Legal Defense Association. We do invite your questions, comments, 800-433-8850. Send your email to drshow@wamu.org. I misspoke earlier when I said there were 166,000 families across the country who are homeschooling. In fact, it's 166,000 students in the state of California who are being homeschooled and who could potentially face this restriction. Professor Riche, I'm wondering what kinds of qualifications you believe are necessary for a parent to become an effective homeschooler?
I don't think there's a simple or unidimensional answer to that question, because as Ms. Rowe indicated and Michael Donnelly then mentioned, there are a diversity of motivations for people who homeschool. Many do it for religious conviction. They want to shield their children from exposure to things that they would deem as immoral or sinful. Others do it because they're dissatisfied with the public or private school alternatives in their neighborhood. Still others do it because they're in principle opposed to any type of institutional environment in which their children might learn, and they do something that has the name unschooling. So I don't think a simple set of regulations is all that easy to come up with, because you're going to be covering a vast array of people, of families with different motivations and different means of homeschooling. So that's one of the reasons, for example, that I'm against the idea that a teaching credential, as was announced in the case in California, is the appropriate regulatory strategy. If that were the answer to, you know, the development of good school outcomes, then we'd have to shut down private schools and charter schools as well, both of which I think are good alternatives. So the question really becomes then, and if I can just continue for one moment here, why it is that we should regulate. And here, as much as I appreciate the story that Ms. Rowe tells about her child and her experience homeschooling, from my perspective as a researcher, I don't want to build public policy on the basis of anecdotes, anecdotes either good or bad. I don't want to hear about the spelling bee champions or the homeschoolers who get into Stanford, nor do I want to hear necessarily about the children who were abused or even killed, as was the case in a D.C. family I know recently that attracted a lot of attention of homeschoolers as well. These anecdotes are not a good basis for figuring out what's happening with the millions of children who are being homeschooled. And then the shocking answer to the question, well, what is happening academically with the children being homeschooled? The shocking answer is we have no idea whatsoever. We don't know what's happening in homeschools in terms of academic outcomes. And so at a minimum, a regulation would have to include some basic skills testing in order to determine that children are actually learning something.
Interesting. We have an email from Jody in Birmingham, Alabama, who says, while Condoleezza Rice is the most vivid success of homeschooling, I regard homeschooling as a misguided attempt by some parents to shield their children from the real world and present only a one-sided view of the world. We demand that attorneys, doctors, nurses, even drivers have a license. I believe children are better off in a public or private school where parents are involved. Parent involvement with professional educators is the best option. I wonder how you would feel about that, Gretchen Rowe.
Actually, I think that's a very interesting premise, because very often when I encounter people who have not been exposed to homeschooling, the first presumption is that we as homeschool families take our children, closet them in a closet, and that's where they remain until they're 18 years old, which is actually pretty much the opposite. My children have a wide variety of experiences, both social and academic, in a wide variety of settings. And as a matter of fact, Dr. Riesch said in his paper that he felt like the social interactions of children can be shielded from exposure to anything that offends the values and beliefs of the parents. I don't shield my children from oppositional values. What I have the opportunity to do is to give them the chance to learn in a situation that gives me the ability to help them weigh in any given situation what would be a moral absolute, what would be a good outcome, what would be an advantageous outcome. And I think the presumption that we segregate our children from life because we homeschool is erroneous.
How much interaction do your children have with other schooled children
daily
in the area?
They have daily interactions with other schooled children in the area. They have daily interactions with people in a wide variety of ages. Not to remain in the anecdotal, as Dr. Riesch said, I find that in Maryland, we have more socially interactive homeschool students who are engaged in a variety of purposes than you would find the average public school student. We're able to take an academic day and consolidate it and be able to move from one venue to the next with a degree of efficiency so that we complete our academic work, and then we can take and the academic environment out into the community and apply it.
Can you give us briefly a typical day for you and your children? Take one child.
There's no typical day. My eldest daughter was homeschooled from third grade through high school. She graduated high school and completed her freshman year of college simultaneously, and then went on to purchase a business at the age of 19, obtain an SBA loan, and become a business owner. She has since divested herself of that business and is preparing for marriage now in a short 2 weeks. But
congratulations.
Thank you very much. And she receives your congratulations. My eighth grade daughter is still a Calvert student. She is part of Calvert's interactive program. 2 days a week, she logs online in a classroom with a degreed teacher and seven other students, and they have a 90-minute class together. And then that class is conducted in what would be a seminar format. And then she has a week's worth of assignments that she takes from that.
So technology has changed the approach to homeschooling.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right. Mike Duntley, Professor Riche mentioned what was happening here in D.C. I know you've been concerned about the district's move toward regulating homeschooling. Tell us about that.
Sure. And the District of Columbia is my responsibility at HSLDA, and I've been working with the district, homeschoolers in the district, as well as the State Board of Education and the Office of the State Superintendent of Education. The case that Professor Riche was referring to is a case of Benita Jacks, who actually pulled her students out of a public school in April of last year, and subsequently the children were found in the home dead. It's a tragic situation, really has nothing to do with homeschooling, and I appreciate Professor Riche's point that, you know, anecdotes are difficult to make public policy on, and I agree with that. I think that you certainly have a lot of anecdotal evidence and positive research, although it may be a small body of research. There's a sufficient body of research, I would argue, that points to homeschooling working. When you look at making public policy, I would point to, you know, our Constitution and, you know, would point to the fact that our nation was founded on the principle that government derived its rights from the people, and that the people in the Ninth and Tenth Amendments reserved the rights not specifically delegated to the government, both state and in the state constitutions and the federal government. And I wonder if Professor Riche would be willing to share who he thinks the we is in the we that he talks about, and who is the we that should be regulating homeschoolers. I'm curious what his opinion on that would be. And when I look at what the Constitution says about parental rights and the rights of parents to direct the upbringing and education of their children, a case that's been cited to Pierce v. Society of Sisters, that's something that's been the very foundation of our nation for many hundreds of years, that parents ultimately are the ones who are responsible for educating children. They can delegate that responsibility, but at the end of the day, it's their responsibility. And so they really, I think, are the ones who have the authority and should be empowered by the government, not further regulated or restricted.
Rob Riche.
Yeah, so I do know something about the legal precedents that Mike Donnelly is citing, but I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not sure a sort of constitutional back and forth is the best thing for the listeners at the moment. I guess what I want to insist upon here is that when we talk about the rights and the interests at stake, what we should keep foremost in our minds is that the rights and interests most at stake in the question of education and the question of regulating any form of education are those of the children, those of the people actually receiving the education. So my objection to unregulated homeschooling is the idea that parents should have untrammeled and unlimited authority to do whatever it is they wish with their children, to decide what their children learn, when they learn it, with whom they learn it, how they learn it, or whether they learn anything at all without any oversight whatsoever. And the reason is not because there's an innate suspicion of what parents might do to their children. To the contrary, the reason is that we have an interest. We, the people, have an interest. All citizens have an interest in seeing that children are raised with an education that provides them with the necessary things for citizenship and independent living.
So, briefly, what are the regulations that you would like to see in place?
Sure, I'll give you three. The first and I think most uncontroversial one, although even the HSLDA I think would oppose this, is the very simple idea that if parents are going to homeschool their children, they register their homeschools with some relevant public authority. Parents announce that they're homeschooling. Secondly, in order to ensure that children are actually receiving some academic instruction and making some progress, there has to be some annual, biannual, I don't have a specific answer here, form of academic testing, minimum basic skills testing to determine whether or not children are actually learning anything. And the third would be that there is some type of curricular overview. Parents would have to submit curricular materials to ensure that they're doing what Ms. Rowe described herself doing, which is exposing their children to ideas and beliefs and values that go beyond what the children would encounter naturally in the home. So there has to be some exposure to the idea that America is a democracy with very different opinions about how things, how people live, how public policy should be made. People are equal citizens but have different ideas. If you're raised in a family, in a homeschool where you never learn about these things, you become a disabled citizen.
And Gretchen Rowe, how would you feel about those three priorities he outlined?
I think his priorities on the surface seem to me to be logical ones. We have engaged in all those things in our homeschool, our minimum basic skills testing, not required by the state, but for our own purposes to see that our children are on task with their education, is that we Stanford test them annually. No one requires us to do that. We choose to do that to see that our children are meeting the academic criteria necessary to become sentient adults. But to make the presumption that an educator has a more vested interest in the education of a child than I as the parent do, I think is fallacious and erroneous.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. I'm going to open the phones now, and we'll go first to Miami, Florida. Corinna, good morning to you. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just wanted to make a comment that I homeschool my daughter not for religious reasons, like is a big segment of the original population of the homeschooling community, but for the same reasons as Gretchen was saying, for academic reasons. The public school that would belong to me is just not an option, not academically, not socially, not safety-wise. And so I feel that my hand was forced among friends, acquaintances, neighbors. Many people said, well, homeschooling, that seems difficult. Why don't you do whatever you have to, lie if you have to list your child in another school system so they can be in a better public school? And I just didn't feel comfortable with that. And so I would like people to consider that some of the options that people are taking to homeschooling because of the public school system available to us throughout the country is that they're cheating the system in order to get their kids into options that are available to some and not available to everyone. I am definitely for regulating, but not the teaching certificate. I think the important part is to have twice annually, the school year would be good, a testing, sort of like a midterm and a final exam type thing. I know that here in Florida, I did have to register that my daughter was not going to be in the public school system. I did have to register, send in a certified letter saying that I was homeschooling. And I do, at the end of the school year, I have 1 year to teach her. I happen to be using the Calvert system, which I find a very great system because it's very, it gives you lesson plans daily. So even though I'm not a teacher, I find it very user-friendly and very appropriate for my child.
What do you think, Mike Donnelly?
About the regulatory aspect? Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we live in a federal republic where the states have a lot of authority, and that this is an issue that is left to the states to determine on their own in their own elected legislatures, and I think that's a good solution for our country. And, you know, some of the states do follow Professor Risch's regulatory framework. Most don't, but some do. And at HSLDA, we're really for freedom. We feel that parents can be trusted. I think that there's plenty of people who would agree with that, and that, you know, by allowing parents the option to educate their children with a minimum of government interference is the best approach.
May I comment on that?
Go ahead.
I appreciate the caller's comments because it allows me to reflect and make the following reflection. The idea that there's a dissatisfaction with public schools certainly does contribute to the burgeoning number of parents who decide to homeschool. But the regulatory framework, especially the regulatory framework that the HSLDA would have us have all states adopt, has nothing to do whatsoever with public schools. I think, if I might then direct this right at Michael Donnelly, if Michael Donnelly's Michael Donnelly had the most wonderful, excellent public school located 100 yards from his house, he would still not send his children to the public school because the public school is itself the problem. It's not the quality of the public school. It's that it's a public school.
Do you want to respond, Michael?
Well, I guess I would have to agree with Professor Rhee. She's right. I would never send my children, and I have six, which my wife Patricia and I, who's having her 40th birthday today, by the way. Happy birthday, hon. And I wouldn't put them in the public school, and there are many people like myself who wouldn't, and there are many reasons for that. I mean, I cited the three reasons that people homeschool, and really, for me, however, the reason wasn't so much safety. It was more about putting our family kind of at the focus of our lives.
All right. Short break, and when we come back, more of your calls, emails, questions about a ruling in California that seeks to regulate homeschooling. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, helping to build a more just future for the nation and the world. At macfound.org. From UVA's Miller Center, presenting a national debate, Should Religion and Politics Mix? Video, transcript, and broadcast details at millercenter.org. And from Harvard's Program on Negotiation, details on negotiation workshops for lawyers and other professionals are available at pon.harvard.edu. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, we'll talk with Michael Kirk, who produced the new Frontline documentary, Bush's War. It's a two-part special about the war in Iraq. Also, The Opt-Out Generation. Meg Wolitzer's new book is about a group of women who choose full-time motherhood over promising careers. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
And we're back talking about homeschooling, to what extent it should be regulated, to what extent parents should be free to make their own choices about homeschooling children. Here with me, Gretchen Rowe. She's a homeschooling parent. She has been for the past 14 years. She's a mother of six. She's the homeschooling community liaison for the Calvert School based in Hunt Valley, Maryland. Mike Donnelly is staff attorney at the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And joining us from a studio in California, Rob Riche, associate professor of political science and ethics in society at Stanford University. Here's a caller who has a different notion about homeschooling. Lou is in Hillsboro, North Carolina.
Here
good
I
morning.
Am.
Good
Hello?
Morning, Lou. Yes, go right
good
ahead.
Good morning. I'm going to move to make sure that I can be heard well because I'm not sure about the signal here. The reason I was calling as soon as I heard your program today is because One of the things that concerns me about homeschooling is, as one of your guests mentioned, the rights of children, and specifically the right of a child to be, to have connection with the world, also in a social way. I mean, I firmly agree with the idea of having some way of testing homeschooled children to make sure that they're getting a proper education. But I also am concerned about whether or not children are isolated, developmentally particularly, if they're being isolated from other from their peers and other age groups in society, which will help in their development, with development which they have a right to be a part of.
Gretchen.
Thank you, Lou. You make a very valid point, and I think there is the assumption here that when we homeschool children, we somehow shut the doors and don't venture out in the community. All of my children, from the 2.5-year-old up to the 21-year-old, have social interactions on a daily basis with a wide variety of individuals.
But that's you. I know homeschooling parents whose children, I have, in fact, people in my neighborhood whose children don't, are never with other children. The daughter right now is about 16 years old, and the last time I saw her, she looked so depressed to me.
Well,
that's,
and
you're talking about you. What about all of these other homeschooling parents?
That is true, Lou. And you know what? I would venture to guess that you and I could probably find a poorly socialized public school student as well in a very short period of time. I think what is at stake here, though, is the vast majority of parents who homeschool their children have those children's interests at their utmost concern.
Explain how your children are socialized on a daily basis with their peers, with adults, with people in the community.
Sure. My 16-year-old works in two different venues with children. On a weekly basis. My 16-year-old and 13-year-old daughters both have newspaper routes in our neighborhood, and they avail themselves of making sure that the elderly in our community are taken care of. They stop by and check on them. We do volunteer work in the community. Frankly, my 18-year-old is a volunteer right now with AmeriCorps. He's doing a one-year internship with AmeriCorps. The 8-year-old is both a Cub Scout and member of something called Christian Brigades, which is Boy Scouts but with a Christian flavor. He is out in the community aiding a couple of public school students who have some chores that they are required in the community to do on a daily basis, and so he does that alongside them. We have public and private school art classes. We have public school forums that we participate in. I hold roundtable discussions at my house with homeschoolers and public schoolers alike who seem to enjoy coming to my house for the atmosphere that we provide.
I hope that answers it, Lou.
Well, yes, my concern is more about who is going to be making sure that the other children in families that don't do all of these wonderful things have the opportunity to be out in the world.
Mike Donnelly.
Well, I appreciate Lou's comments. You know, you can find, as Gretchen pointed out, successes and failures anywhere. And as Professor Reich pointed out, anecdotes don't make for good public policy. You know, there are studies that have been done, and we can have a little bit of a discussion about that. And some studies, again, have been done on homeschooling, how they perform academically, how they perform socially. I'm aware of a study that was done in 2003 that tested homeschooled students on the SSRS, which is a standardized test of social skills. Homeschoolers did as good or better on this particular test as did the public school counterparts. So that test would seem to suggest that homeschoolers aren't being harmed by the kind of socialization that they're getting at home.
Here's an email from Michael in Fort Lauderdale who says he wants to know how well homeschooled children score on SATs and how well they're prepared for college. Do we have any stats on that?
There are some statistics on – Robert, I'll let you jump right in if you just let me get out this little section here.
Absolutely.
There are some statistics. The ACT – I know of the ACT that there is some statistics that have been put out that homeschoolers score slightly above above the public school average. So they're doing better on ACTs. And many colleges that we know of, and we've been through the fight to help colleges understand how to understand homeschoolers at HSLDA. We've been doing that for a long time. And what we've seen is that colleges are looking for homeschoolers. You know, the Brown University dean of students at one point a couple years ago said, we like homeschoolers because they're risk takers, they're self-directed, they're aggressive learners, and that's the epitome of a Brown student. So, you know, that's anecdotal, but I think there's a lot of that that points to the fact that they're doing well, they're going to college.
Rob.
Lots of great anecdotes. I teach homeschoolers here at Stanford, and they're also terrific students. We could also point again to all of the awful anecdotes, and again, not a basis for public policy. So two issues here. The studies that Michael Donnelly just mentioned are, I would call them, they're of varying degrees of badness. Here's why. Every study that's been done that I know about has either been conducted by a homeschool advocacy organization, so an organization whose mission is to forward the interests of homeschoolers. So I think as a public policy matter, we ought to treat these studies in the same way we think about studies done by tobacco companies on nicotine addiction. We should have some innate skepticism about them. Secondly, then the issue becomes when the studies aren't done by advocacy organizations, how are they recruiting people to participate? Is it voluntary participation, or are they somehow getting a random sample of homeschoolers? Almost all the studies that have been done are on the basis of voluntary participation. Now, what families would you predict would be most likely to refuse to participate in a study on the academic performance of their children? Precisely those families worried about the academic performance. So all of these studies have biased samples in a way, and we just can't trust them as a matter of saying what the average homeschool child does.
Gretchen, have your children ever wanted to go to public schools?
At one point in time, I endured an illness, and we re-enrolled my daughter then in the sixth grade, and that eight-year-old, we took him to the public school, which is four doors from my house, and he tested beyond the sixth grade, but they didn't think that they could stick an eight-year-old in a seventh grader's classroom, so they put him in fourth grade, and they spent 9 weeks in public school. They thought it was going to be an excellent idea. They were very excited for about the first 10 days until they realized that the vast majority of their day was spent waiting upon everyone else to conclude their work. And very quickly said to us, you said we were going to stay for a 9-week term. Are you sure that we have to do that? Mm. And they did stay the 9 weeks. Then they did return home again. My soon-to-be ninth grader, we offered her the option this coming school year.
You did.
We said, all right, it's time to plan your high school career. Where do you want to participate? And do you want us to look at a private school option? Do you want us to look at a public school option? Or do you want to continue to be homeschooled? She took a day and a half to think about that and came back and said, you know, I have looked at my friends who are in public school. I've looked at my friends who are in private school. And I think that homeschooling is the best option for me.
It's interesting. Here's an email from Craig who says, Gretchen Rowe teaches six kids at different ages. What are her qualifications to teach chemistry and European history, among other subjects?
Well, you know what? The truth of the matter is the Calvert School provides me an absolutely wonderful academic platform for my children from kindergarten through eighth grade. And we have used the Calvert School with all five of our academic age children.
And now, then what I have a two-and-a-half year old after the eighth grade?
I have a two-and-a-half-year-old who's my loose cannon, but he will eventually become a Calvert School student. After eighth grade, we're blessed in Maryland to have a wide variety of options for us. My high school students have all participated in a nonprofit high school homeschool tutorial.
I see.
And they are taught by degreed teachers in a seminar format weekly. I am still the ultimate authority as far as their grades and what they need to attain as far as completing a course. But I have the partnership of a cooperative to be able to work with me. I don't even pretend to give the opinion that I could teach upper-level mathematics. It's not something I would like to do. But I do have resources at my ability.
There's another interesting issue going on outside this country, Mike Donnelly. You've been active in defending homeschoolers in Germany. What's the issue there?
The issue there is that the German public policy machines have decided that they don't want parents to homeschool their children, period. They interpret their compulsory attendance laws to interpret that you must attend school in a state-approved public school or state-approved private school. And if you don't, if you keep your kids at home, then you'll be fined thousands of dollars, you will be put in jail, or your children will be taken away from you. And one of those two Supreme Courts in Germany actually ruled that it is an abuse of parental rights, if you can believe this, to homeschool. It's a fairly shocking approach to education in Germany, and it really is outside the mainstream of the rest of Europe and America, because in the rest of Europe, homeschooling is a perfectly legal option in a variety of different ways, different regulatory schemes. But in Germany, they have really are persecuting people, parents who choose for a variety of reasons not to want to send their children to a public school.
Where do you see that going?
I wish I could tell you, Diane. I'm working very hard, and there are many people in Germany who are trying to change this. But, you know, the reality is when you face that kind of persecution, you know, people are going to vote with their feet, and they are. They are fleeing Germany. On a monthly basis, families are fleeing Germany to move to England, to Canada, to America, to other countries because of the lack of educational freedom in Germany. It's a very sad situation.
At 7 minutes before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. And now to Thomasville, Georgia. Good morning, Walter. Thanks for waiting.
Thank you. I have five daughters that we have homeschooled for the last 17 years. My oldest daughter is 22. She is working at a children's home in Thailand. She was homeschooled all her life. She currently owns her own website design company. And I know that the professor, one of your guests, is saying that we should not use anecdotal information, but then he quickly proceeded to tell us about the negative anecdotal story of the family in Washington. And I think if you look at statistics, you'll see that public education is just completely bankrupt in this country. Our children are not well educated in the public school system. I worked in the public school system for a while, and I saw just the predatory teachers, all the incidents we hear about teachers sleeping with their students, the lack of true education, which is, I believe, you must teach a child how to think rather than what to think, the lack of freedom to teach faith issues such as creation as opposed to evolution. All of those things convince me that public school was not for our children, and our children are tested academically, and they've scored well over the averages for their ages and for their grade levels.
Interesting. So, thank you for sharing your experience, Walter. Rob, you wanted to comment?
I was just going to ask, I mean, so Gretchen has mentioned, and now the caller Walter mentioned, that they give their children some type of basic skills testing. So I wonder why Michael Donnelly would be so opposed to the regulation of homeschools, to impose a regulation on homeschooling, that there be some annual basic skills testing, since many of the callers or many people have now spoken up in favor of it.
Well, I appreciate your question, Robert. I think at the end of the day, our position is that it's an issue for the states to decide. And, you know, we're for freedom, for more freedom, for less restriction. And in many states, there are testing. You know, we don't actively fight against that. But we believe that parents having more choices and less government intrusion is better. That's our position.
Are you also for the freedom of children? What if the child wants to learn, say, science, but the parents haven't taught them it?
Well, I think that children have been placed in families, and it's the family's responsibility and the parents primarily to nurture those children, to care for those children. And I think that parents can be trusted.
Have any of the presidential candidates spoken out on issues regarding homeschooling, Mike?
Well, I know that on the Republican side, several of them have been outspoken advocates of homeschooling. On the Democratic side, I know that John Edwards, when he was in the race, talked about he and his wife Elizabeth homeschooling their children during the campaign, and so they talked about it. I'm not sure if Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama have talked about homeschooling at all.
Are you at all concerned, Gretchen, about where this conversation on homeschooling is going, where the California courts may take the country?
I am concerned. One of the reasons that I wanted to come and appear on your program is because I think raising the consciousness about the debate raises all of us to a higher level of understanding. I think HSLDA is doing a wonderful thing in coming alongside this family, although they were not members, and helping them with the appeals process. I do want to mention one thing that Rob said. He said that children have rights here, and they do have rights, but they have to have rights in concert with their ages. And I think it's important to take into account that the parents are still considered the authority until a child reaches the age of majority.
Gretchen Rose, she's been a homeschooling parent for the past 14 years. Mike Donnelly, staff attorney for the Homeschool Legal Defense Association. And Rob Reese, she's associate professor of political science and ethics in society at Stanford University. Thank you all so much.
Thank you, Diane.
And thanks for listening, everyone. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Tanya Weinberg, and Emmanuel Tui. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts.